first, let me apologize to the translators. I will do my best not to speak too quickly. Actually, I have to admit that when I was invited to Rome, I brought my own translator with me. I was smart enough to marry an Italian. And when she heard we were coming, no volcano was going to stop her. We had a few pagan sacrifices going on in our house, too, two volcanoes. So, thank you very much. So what I'd like to talk about is a belief that I have. I believe that the best days of librarianship are ahead of us. I believe that we are the right profession, uniquely positioned to lead in the knowledge age. However, we won't get there following current trends and our current focus on recorded knowledge. Now, what's interesting is I use this slide a lot because I found out that when I start a slide with librarians have a future, people want to invite me back. But it's something I do believe. And what's interesting is as I've been using this, the economic crisis that's in the United States and in Italy and all around the world, I actually used this at a presentation recently, and it was one of these speaking and people in round tables, and I said, I believe the best days of librarianship are ahead of us. And a wonderful librarian in the front row went, I thought, my good, what? I've never had someone just sort of scoff right in front of a presentation. And it takes a moment because right now it's they're hard times. In the United States, we're dealing with, there's sort of a lag between when the economy sours and when municipal funds sour at the state and local levels. And so we've seen layoffs of librarians. We're seeing in academic libraries, we're seeing staff layoffs. We're seeing in school libraries. School librarians are losing their positions. And so it can be very difficult to say there's a bright future for us. And yet, when I look at it, I'll draw your attention to that last bullet. We won't get there following current trends with our current focus on recorded knowledge. We can't get to the future dragging behind us all the traditions and practices of the past. What we must do is we must look at what is core, what is durable, what are those things that need to last into the next century and the next century after that, and those are the things we need to build up. What are our central core concepts? And how can we define librarianship not by what we do, but why we do it? So I want to just pick on for a moment this notion of recorded knowledge. This is a page out of the Gutenberg Bible. And just in case you were looking for a copy of it, I found one in Austin, Texas, of all places, but not that I took this picture. And when people look at this, they might bring many different things to this resource, this artifact, this object. Some people, when they see the Bible, look at this as the origin of printing. They say, oh, Gutenberg, this is when you look at the way information suddenly, we could have mass copies, we could create multiple copies, information became a commodity, it became something we could store, it became something that we could duplicate. Other people, when they look at this, might look at this as an artifact to be preserved. This is an art object. It is ancient and precious, and we must put it in a safe place, and we have to worry about the humidity, and we have to worry about exposure to light, and we have to conserve this item. And still others will look at this and see religious truth. This is the Word of God. This is the Bible. This is how we interact with the deity. And what's interesting, of course, is that you may have multiple perspectives at the same time. These aren't mutually exclusive. My point with bringing up all these views in relation to this thing, this artifact, this object, is that it is we who bring the context to the object, not the object that defines it. That, in fact, this is the land of librarianship. Dealing not with the object, that is a tool that gets us someplace, but really in what it means and how we use it. And that meaning, that use is defined by the user, by the person that we are trying to solve their problem. So the user, or actually the term that I like, that I've been using a lot, particularly in the United States, is the notion of member. That the member of the library defines context, not the object. I'll just take a moment, if I may. Joan Fry Williams actually came up with this notion of not user, not patron, but member. I'm not sure what the Italian equivalent would be. What do you call someone who goes into a library? All right. In the United States, only computer scientists and drug dealers have users, so it's important. And so they were having, what's interesting is when I asked this question, I could ask this amongst a room of librarians in the States, and they would have the same sort of confused, well, what do you call them? I don't know, what do you call them? And we would go back and forth, and Joan Fry Williams was part of a strategic planning process, and she goes, hold on, I'll find out. And she walked into the library and said, what should we call you? And almost to a person, they said, member. I have a card, I pay taxes, I'm a member of this library. I have a say in how it works. So the member defines the use, defines the context. That's what I mean when we talk about recorded knowledge. There is no such thing as recorded knowledge. Knowledge is uniquely human. It's in our head. This is a byproduct of knowledge. It's a byproduct of a human activity. It has value. It is important. It is not irrelevant, but it is secondary. It is not knowledge. Now, what I want to do is give you a thought experiment to sort of work that out. Imagine if we gave out with a $10, every time we sold an iPad or a Kindle or a Nook or an electronic e-reader, right? So I've got mine. So we have our pretty tools. This gets more attention than I do in the streets of Rome. So, you know, you get this. And it can read books. And if you're really clever, you can go ahead and wherever you have it. Here we go. You can read a book, and what's cute is that you can turn the page and Anyway, imagine every time you bought one of those, it cost you $10 more. Cost you 10 euros, which is like $20 more, in content with that device. But for that added money, with this network connection, you could have any book you want anytime. You don't have to pay for it. So I'm going to say that you buy this, and so someone walks into your library, they hand you one of these devices, you could just go ahead and add information. Now, what does that do to your role as a librarian? What does that do to the world of libraries? If we have an always connected, free, easily available interface to all the books and materials, does that make the library more important or less important? And many times we're having this debate, and people go, well, why you don't need a library then? Many policymakers are saying things like, well, if I can get it all on Google, I don't need a library anymore. But what's interesting is I would argue, actually, this means you need a librarian more. And it actually makes the job of a librarian a lot easier. Rather than having to deal with, do I have copyright to this? Can I copy it? Can I make it, you know, how can I send it? Do I have to keep an electronic copy? If I just knew that if you hand me this device, I could put anything on it I want to solve your problem, that makes my life better. Now, this may seem like a far-fetched idea, it will never happen, but if you look at a lot of what's happening in libraries, once again, I'm going to admit I have a very sort of American perspective on this, so maybe it's totally different over here. I doubt it. You see that many libraries are seeing a shift in ownership to rental model, where we used to own the materials, used to buy the book and have the book. Now we're putting people in electronic databases. And we don't own the articles in the databases. We lease them. We license them. We pay yearly for them. And that means when we stop paying, there go the resources. That you look at databases, you look at digital rights management, you look at digital content. People listening to the music on their iPods and such don't actually own the music. In the United States, with the Kindle, it was beautifully illustrated, they sold a copy of George Orwell's Animal Farm. And what happens is the person who was selling it turns out didn't have the rights to it. And so all these people who had bought it on their Kindle woke up the next morning and suddenly it was gone. Amazon went in and took the book back. I mean, could you imagine this with a physical book? You know, some breaking into your house to find, rifling through your library and pulling a book back, right? This changes the world, right? You look at explosion in artifact production. We're producing more books and more titles than we ever did. That we're seeing the content that used to be people looking at books, or in the academic world, people who look at journals. The journal is just about dead. Because now when people request things through interlibrary loans or copies, they ask for articles. They don't ask for a journal anymore. They ask for that article. And increasingly, we're going to start seeing people ask for that part of that article. And we're going to begin breaking content down. An explosion in data. When MIT opened their DSpace archive and they said, we're ready for your materials, please. And they asked for materials to be presented to them, assuming that they would get articles and manuscripts and books. The first person to knock on their door were people who ran satellites and said, I have a 10 terabyte data set. Here you go. What do we do when we're generating, you know, petabytes? Good luck on translating that one. But it's a lot of information, right? What I'm saying is this idea of how we change what we're doing is changed now. We don't have to wait for the $10, 10 euro model where we have it. If you look at your libraries, how your libraries operate is different than it was before. And this idea that you own a collection and you sort through a collection and you organize a collection is an idea that's in danger. And so what we need to do is we need to begin defining librarianship. I would argue that librarianship began by getting back to our roots of not defining it as caretaking artifacts and materials and things. They are important. But looking at what is the true mission that we have. Now, this is one of my favorite quotes, that to practice without theory is to set sail in an uncharted sea, and theory without practice is not to set sail at all. And as a library science educator and researcher, there's always been a divide between the European library science and the American library science, and it's not the ocean. It's that people in Europe tend to worry about things like theory and epistemology. People in the United States are not just pragmatic, we are practically mercenary in worrying about how we do things. So we're going to meet in the middle here. And what I want to do is talk a little bit about theory and how that theory impacts what we really need to do. All right? And to do that, I'm going to start with a proposed mission. That when I look at the mission of a library or a librarian, it is not to collect, it is not to organize, it is not to provide access to. It is a mission of the individual. So the mission of librarians is to improve society through facilitating knowledge creation in their communities. Now, I want you to notice a few things about this mission. The first is that it is a mission of librarians, not the mission of a library. It means it's the individual's obligation. I think all too often we abstract out our responsibilities. We say, oh, it's the library that does this, and the library has this mission, and the library does this. Well, if you work in the library, you are the library. You have the mission. All too often we say, oh, the website is horrible for the library. Well, who put it up? You did. Or, oh, we can't do this because the library won't let us. You're the people who let you or don't let you. We set laws, we set policy, we set organizational structures. It's the individuals in this room who are ultimately responsible for the future and the power and the impact of the library. A few other things to note about this. First of all, the mission of the librarian is to improve society. I think if you want to stop there, it's still a good mission. That we may not do that by changing all of society at once. Maybe we change one person, two people, our communities, our universities, our municipalities, our townships. But ultimately, the reason we're doing this is to make the world a better place. That makes it a mission and not simply a task. And how do we do it? Through facilitating knowledge creation. Remember, knowledge is uniquely human, and so we help people do it. So we can break this up into things like, what do I mean by mission? What do I mean by librarians? What do I mean by improved society, facilitation, knowledge creation, and communities? And we can take these and break them all down, and for the next 3 or 4 days, we'll be here doing that. So let me just take a few of these. Let's start with knowledge creation. What does it mean to facilitate knowledge creation? So let's spend a little time in theory, and then I'll show you how this really does change what we do. Well, coming out of learning theory, what we learn is that knowledge creation, that knowledge is created through conversation. Those conversations may be with groups. They may be between two people. They may be between two organizations. I mean, I'm here as part of an embassy mission, right, where we're having national conversations. We may be within ourselves, talking to ourselves, not always the thing we want to do in public, but that's what we're doing. When we read a book, we're not having a conversation with the book. It's just dead trees. We're not having a conversation with the author. They could be equivalent of dead trees. We're having a conversation with ourselves. Do we believe this? Do we agree with this? Would we do this? Would we not do this? And that means we learn by reading textbooks and technical manuals, but we also learn by reading fiction. We learn by reading poetry. We learn about ourselves. So this comes out of conversation theory, and conversation theory tells us that if we to define a conversation consists first of conversants, the people having the conversations. Next, it consists of the language that we're exchanging back and forth. And that language is a little bit more complicated than just which languages we speak. there are two levels. There's a very basic level of language, which is directional. It's negotiation. It's things like, I will speak English if you'll speak English. You know? Then there is a higher level language, which is about the actual content that you're trying to decipher. And so if you think about a reference interview, or when you're working with a researcher, we spend a lot of time in low-level languages, going things like, what do you need? What have you already looked at? What can we do for you today? And not so much time in these very in-depth languages. The other thing we know is that many people have many different languages, just as Italian and English, that what happens is that librarians have built very specialized languages. MARC, people have built, used Dewey, people that use Library of Congress classification, people use all these different classifications. And what we know, though, is that there hasn't been much negotiation with our members as to what that language is. And so while we as librarians can speak that language very well, and we can work through catalogs and systems, our patrons, not so much. I mean, we know, if you look at studies of how people use library catalogs, librarians are amazing. You can, you know, practically cook breakfast with catalogs. You're really good. You look at what our patrons can do, they might as well just come and start smashing on the keyboard to see what happens, right? That's because we have different languages, and they're not shared. So we exchange language. Now, why are these people exchanging language? To come up with an agreement. Oh, I agree. Like, yes, that's my topic. Yes, it's a nice day out today. Yes, 2 + 2 = 4. Yes, all of these things. So we go with agreements. The most important agreement we come up with is agreeing to disagree. We're just not going to agree. Let's move on. And lastly, there's memory here. That we remember these agreements over time. In fact, one of the fundamental roles of libraries is to act as a culture's memory. To accurately recall what has happened in the past. And that, by the way, itself is an ongoing conversation about what happened in the past. But there's a very important thing that we need to know about memory, which is that memory is not rational and reductionist. Memory does not come into nice little boxes. Memory is messy. Memory is connected. So things like if you have an agreement that says that Mount Everest is this tall and that you have an agreement that your plane can fly this high, this only becomes very important when you relate these two things together, like trying to fly over Mount Everest, right? How you connect things, how you understand things are very important. As I walk through Rome, which I've been having a great time walking through Rome, I see all these wonderful obelisks and edifices, which are all about memory. But what's interesting is I look at them, and once again, I bring something very different to them. I look at the hieroglyphics, and I go, I don't know. It looks pretty. Take a picture, right? These kind of relations and how we hold them in esteem and what their importance are, they're going to change from culture to culture. Once again, I bring the context. Now, what this means is that libraries that have classically looked at how we organize things in nice little buckets doesn't work too well anymore. And that changes how we organize systems. So, for example, this is a screenshot of a virtual reference system, Question Point, that some of you may be using. And we all know how this looks, right? So that we have a place to write in one end, and we have pages that we can push in the other. And it goes very much about looking at a reference desk and how do we make that electronically, when in fact these systems should start looking like this, which is, here's a book. It's related to this movie that was made of it, that's related to this critique, which is related to this. And suddenly we link information together. Imagine, for example, that if you walked into your library and the books literally rearranged themselves by what you needed. Right, so I walk into your library, and suddenly all the books in English pop up ahead of time because I can't read the other ones. And suddenly all the English books change so that I begin looking at history books are actually related to tourism for me or actually related to, well, marital status for me because I need to have my wife look at these things. And so you connect all these things. You rearrange them. And so now imagine instead of walking into a library and walking up to a desk to ask a question, you walk into a library and we put you at a table. And as you sit at the table, you begin taking things that you've read, and you begin laying them out on the table. And you begin organizing them into piles. And you begin putting note cards about what the piles mean. And now when you have a question, you invite the librarian over to ask the question. They can start with how you look at the world. And they can begin adding it. The number one most insulting question that you can ask a member when they're asking a reference question, have you tried Google? Yes, I wouldn't be here if I hadn't tried Google and it failed. Right? Now you can say, oh, you've looked at these materials. Did you know that this is another material? So organizing reference as a set of connections and not a simple question-answer interrogation. So we can then take this and look a different way. So the other thing that this mission talks about is the role of community. And what's interesting in the role of community is that community is putting a pressure on our organizations. That if we're learning is a conversation, if learning is a dialogue has two parties, and each has an important role to play. If to have a conversation, I need to stop talking and listening. Right? That the other party needs to talk, and they need to stop and listen. And that puts a pressure. Where do we go next depends on your answer to a question that leads to another question. Well, this is showing up in our organizations. When people come to our library websites and they see just this wonderful broadcast of the things we have, and they want to say, wait, did you know that this is misspelling? This is wrong. You need to add this material. You're seeing a pressure from the community to say, we want to help shape these systems. Now, how does that change things? Well, if we look at our physical environments, we were working with the Free Library of Philadelphia. And the Free Library of Philadelphia had a radical idea, which was to talk to its patrons about what they needed. And so they had a music collection. And it looks a lot like any music collection. It had a bunch of CDs, scores, records, materials. And we started talking to musicians and asking them, what are your conversations? What are you trying to do? Not in the library, just what's it like to be a musician? And we said, what do you want? And they said, we want two grand pianos on a stage. Because for the librarians in Philadelphia, firstly, when they pick up a piece of music and they're deciding to play it, they can only hum it so far. They want to get down and play it. They need to hear it. The other thing is, a lot of the classical music that we were talking with our musicians were written for the harpsichord, and it turns out when you play the piano, you actually need to transpose music. And they wanted a system that showed that. The other thing I didn't realize is there are books and books of errors in scores, that things that people have gone in and found errors, and they keep lists of these. They wanted those in real time. But the most important thing they needed was, they said, the most important conversation we have is in performance. In order for music to matter, we have to perform it. And there aren't enough places in Philadelphia to perform it. We want a place to perform it. And you can capture the score, and you can capture the audio, and you can make that part of the collection. And in fact, over time, people from outside of Philadelphia are going to come to the library to learn about music in Philadelphia, not having the citizens of Philadelphia go to the library to learn about everyone else's music. We talked to business leaders, and we said, what do businesses need out of our libraries? And the businesses said, nothing. They said, if we're big enough, we have our own libraries. They said, but a public library, when I started this business, when I was an entrepreneur, that's when I needed the library. I needed a place to go and learn about new things because I couldn't ask my company's library because I was about to leave. And so I went in and learned all these things. They said, but the thing is, to start a business, I don't need a book about how to start a business, and I don't need a book about the business. I need a place to keep my presentations. I need a place to get away from my children. I need a place that I can make a pitch in a nice place. And so what they said is, a business library should look more like this than it should look like a collection of books. I not only need that, but once I'm there, I need access to accountants. I need access to lawyers. I need to take field trips to successful businesses. In essence, the library said, you're trying to build knowledge of starting a new business. In order to build that knowledge, you need to have conversations, and we need to build services that look like your conversations, not the results of other people's conversations. So then we talked about digital environments. What does this look like in a digital environment? Many of you may be familiar with pages that look like this. These are DSpace repositories. In academic libraries, this was going to save our life. We were going to get all our academics to give our papers. We forgot to talk to the academics about that. And so we take them all and we put Dublin Core on it, and we put them in these nice little morgues of repositories, and we say, there it is. Well, the academics come and look at this, and they don't know what to make of it. It doesn't look like their life. In fact, they should begin to look a lot more like this. This is the Public Library of Science, an open-access biology journal. But notice it has spotlights, it has peer review, it has editions. It looks like a journal. Academics understand journals. Suddenly, a conversation. The academic says, I see myself in that. I see the ongoing scholarly conversation in that. And we started looking at hybrid environments. And so one of the things that we've had in hybrid environments, looking at these mixes of digital and not, is Syracuse University's having a big argument. We're out of space. We don't have any more rooms for books. So what do we do? Well, you take all the books and you put them in compact shelving off-site. Well, the humanities scholars are not happy about this. Because when they say, this is how we do things, we browse around and look at the book. So taking them off site where we can't look at them won't work. What we need is a better browsing interface. And so what we started experimenting with are the notion of augmented reality, which means that as you walk into your library and you have your cell phone with a camera on it, as you look around the stacks, you can say, oh, look, there's an interesting book to read there. Oh, look, my friend just read that book there. Oh, look, I've seen notes here. And they can browse. And by the way, these 12 books that were taken off the collection would fit here, and I can request them directly from this connection. Right? So we see this idea of even the collection, even the organization on shelving is a service. It promotes a conversation. And so how do we continue doing those kinds of interfaces? How do we continue to use the digital and the hybrid together to promote conversations? So ultimately what we can do is we can take this mission and we can begin taking all of these areas. And just as I've done with knowledge, I can begin to break them down further and further and further, and eventually, if you have no sleep, you come up with a big map, which is something we're calling the Atlas of Librarianship, due in bookshelves in 2011. Right? So I don't want to take up too much more of your time, so let me just take some conclusions. First of all, librarianship beyond the library. If we are in the conversation business, if our job is to facilitate knowledge with physical spaces, with collections, with books and materials, and sometimes without. We need to go to those conversations. It used to be that in the States, to take a library with you, to take library services with you, you needed a van. We called them bookmobiles. And we'd drive them out into rural areas and we'd service them. Now, to take the library with me, I just need one of these. I can just walk in and ask, what's the question you're trying to solve? And I can find out if their materials are available. Yes, I might need to go back to the library to pick them up. But at this point, you are the library, and you can be everywhere. If you're dealing with a town, why aren't you in City Hall? Why can't you, for example, go into the theater district to talk about how to support theater information? Embedding librarians within the community. We're seeing an increasing focus on service over collections. Collections and buildings are services. But they're tools to achieve the mission. The mission remains, how do we build knowledge? How do we expand that information? You probably have already faced this, right? Think about the number of public access computers that you put in your library. Notice that you didn't put the servers in the library in the public spaces. You put the places to use them. The servers are in the basement or off-site, right? So we need to look at collections and buildings as services. In the United States, I was asked by the MacArthur Foundation to find out what the future of libraries were, and they gave me a week to do it. And so I called up, I would call up a public library director, and I'd say, excuse me, what is the future of libraries? We'd go back and forth a little bit. And finally, they'd say, well, I can't tell you about academic libraries. They're out of luck. No one's going to need them anymore. But public libraries, we're going to have a physical space that's all about learning and community activities. I call up an academic library and I say, excuse me, what is the future of libraries? They say, well, I can't tell you about public libraries because we don't need them anymore. But for academic libraries, it's a community space that's all about learning. And I just wanted to put the phone together and say, could you talk together? Because what's amazing to me is that one of the things that we're facing, and I believe we're going to talk about LIS education later, is that we're all librarians. And while we may live in academic spaces and public spaces and special spaces and museum spaces and all these different places, we're all librarians. And just like we shouldn't no longer take a look at our books and break them down and break them down and break them down, we've got to stop doing that to ourselves. To stop saying, I'm an academic librarian, I can't speak to a public librarian. Oh, I'm a special librarian, I can't speak to a school librarian. You're all librarians. We all share a common mission, common skills. So librarians and libraries are in the learning business, and therefore we're in the conversation business. What I would ask you to remember is that, once again, the mission of librarians is to improve society through facilitating knowledge creation in communities. We don't want to simply remember what society is doing. We don't want to sit on the side and figure out what's happening. We must be active. That ultimately, librarians must serve, and our core mission is service. We are there to make a difference. We are there to answer questions. We are there to support others. Our ultimate success is in the success of those we serve. Our ultimate success is in the scholar who wins the Nobel Prize, or in the artist who creates great art, or in the politician that creates great policy. So service is at our core. But ultimately, we are also in the innovation business. If we are in learning, if you take learning as literally changing someone's world view, learning is taking someone's perspective and changing it. And it might just be a little bit, but sometimes it's enormous. It might be in adding a little piece of information to someone about history, and it might be as great as someone finding their next career and vocation. It might be as small as someone finding the next book to read, and as great as someone finding a way out of a damaged relationship. It might be as large as understanding their role in the world. But that change means that we change lives. How can we expect to be positive, radical change agents for our communities if we ourselves are risk averse, if we ourselves are conservative? We must be change agents. We must model the improvement that we want to see in our larger communities. And to do that, ultimately, we must lead. That we cannot stand idly back and assume that society will improve without us. That we cannot sit back as some sort of empty repository waiting for the artifacts of other people's great thoughts. That as librarians, we must see the better society. We must have the vision of the greater improvement, and we must be active and militant in our ability to go out and bring our communities forward. That we cannot sit back and let people say, oh, that's the library. Oh, we'll put them in this corner. Or, oh, we'll get that when we're done. We must be there. We must be fighting the good fight. We must be doing the new invention. We must be moving forward. Thank you very much.